Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. It's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM. And 7:50 a.m. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini, alongside Travis Anderson. There's plenty of national sports in the headlines, and you can thank the San Antonio Spurs and Kawhi Leonard for that. Travis, I think we spent a whole show talking about this on Friday. Typically, there's about a week of dead time between the, the free agent chit-chat and the NBA draft. Once the draft rolls around, you know you're going to see some trades that'll shake things up a little bit. Some teams will start shedding some salary or selling, I guess you could say. Kawhi gave us an additional 6 days of NBA talk by basically saying he wants out of San Antonio last Friday. And I think that's still the number one topic among the national sports headlines.
Yeah, draft is on Thursday, so will San Antonio moving before the draft?
No.
No, they'll wait until after. So eventually, you're going to have to move on. We talked about it. You can't have Kawhi Leonard on your team going into the season because he's disgruntled, and you don't want that lingering throughout the season because the question marks where he's a free agent next season, so you're going to basically lose him for nothing anyways.
I think that Kawhi will end up moved at some point in time this summer, only because San Antonio loses a little bit more leverage with every passing day. Now, the one good thing is he is under contract for, what, 2 more years, right?
Yeah, he gets a player option, what, next year.
So. Okay, so he's under contract for 1 more year, and then you're going to have to move him. But move him before that, because the value, I guess, decreases by the day. So it is a very interesting scenario. Some reports coming out over the weekend saying that the San Antonio Spurs will not consider moving him to a Western Conference team. And with that being said, there's a couple of other teams in play here, and I think that's Boston. And I talked about Cleveland on Friday, and I don't think that anyone really took me serious in saying Cleveland, and I don't think he's going to end up in Cleveland. But the Cavs, I think, are going to work tirelessly to find a third team to try to pick up Kawhi Leonard. I think they're going to do everything they possibly can, and I think that may be enough to keep LeBron in Cleveland. That's what that could be the curveball to this whole offseason. I don't see LeBron leaving a situation where he has a chance to play with a guy that will guard the best player on the opposing team. So keep an eye on Cleveland.
Yeah, Cleveland could, you know, entice San Antonio with the 8th overall pick, Kevin Love, whatever else, and then you get Kawhi, then LeBron re-ups, there's 2 of 3, then somehow you can convince Paul George to come to Cleveland. There's your super team.
Well, they'd have to do a lot of tinkering,
but yeah,
a lot of tinkering for that to happen. But, you know, I'm just saying that there's a lot of story to play out here. However, Kawhi definitely did find a way to steal the headlines over the weekend. Now, as far as some of the other national sports stories go, you can talk about this one. I don't know if this is a surprise or not. Barry Trotz, head coach of the Washington Capitals, has resigned after winning the Stanley Cup.
So he had a clause in his contract that he signed 4 years ago that stated that if he won the cup, that it automatically kicks an extension in for 2 years, which is basically paying him 1.3 or 1.4, very low for Barry Trotz, who's one of the best coaches in the league. So yeah, kind of a little bit of shocker in Washington. He won't be a free agent long. I mean, the Islanders will probably gobble him up quickly.
I think if you look at the coaching market, and again, I'm not a hockey guy, but it's pretty simple to understand that you have head coaches like Mike Babcock of the Maple Leafs, right? He got a huge salary, did he not?
He did, yeah, from the Maple Leafs, yep.
So I think when you look at the market,
Quenneville with Chicago as well signed these huge extensions back in 14 and really changed the market for coaching.
That's why he basically wants out, right?
Yeah.
There's more money on the table. He will coach next season.
Yeah, he'll get paid higher from someone else. So he will get paid. So for Washington, they're losing a guy that brought a cup to their franchise for the first time in 44 years.
Pay the man, right?
Pay him. He's one of the best. He has one of the highest win percentages in the league.
In 4 seasons with the Capitals, 205-89-34, best record in the league. Becomes the first active coach since Mike Keenan with the New York Rangers in 94 to not return to the team with whom he won the Stanley Cup with in the previous season.
Yeah, Babcock's contract with Toronto is 6.25 per year. Quinville's is about 3.
Right now, I guess there's only one team, and I could be wrong on this, right? There's only one team in the National Hockey League without a head coach, and that's the New York Islanders.
Yep, the Islanders are the only one. So they'll probably move quickly, but...
And try to give him everything, right?
Yeah, and maybe some teams move on from their current coaches and go get Trot. So.
Seen it in the NBA, we've seen it in the NFL. It doesn't happen very often, but this is a guy that I think will be scarfed up and is probably going to get paid. You mentioned it. He was going in the last year of his contract, although there was talk about him potentially getting that extension during the Stanley Cup. So that's the news coming out of hockey. Outside of that, there's really not a lot else brewing. Of course, it's baseball season. We get some day baseball today before we dive out of that. We can jump back over to the NBA here for just a moment. Speaking of the San Antonio Spurs, this kind of shocks me a little bit. Rudy Gay opts out of his contract. He's now in a official unrestricted free agent in the NBA.
So he's banking on getting a bigger deal somewhere else. So
he was turning down he is turning down $8.8 million.
That's a lot of money to turn down, I guarantee there. So I don't know if anybody's going to pay him that much. I don't think he's worth it, but we'll
he played 1 year in San Antonio. I think he played in roughly 60 games for the season, averaged 11-5. Career low, 21 minutes a game. I mean, he wasn't playing a lot. But now the Spurs have to wait for Danny Green. He has a player option of $10 million. I thought for sure both Green and Rudy Gay would opt in. But that's some news. And again, I know we're jumping all over the place, but that reverts back to the topic of Kawhi Leonard. Rudy Gay is now a free agent, and I think that's good for San Antonio. I think it gives them a little bit more breathing room. It also leads me to believe that Rudy Gay knows they're not going to be competing for an NBA title next year, which means a trade with Kawhi is inevitable. So I think you can go ahead and connect the dots. Let's take a look at the Major League Baseball scoreboard. The Nationals and the Yankees are going at it right now. They'll actually play, I guess you can call it, doubleheader action. We got a score right now?
5-3 heading into the bottom of the eighth, Washington front, game one. Game two will follow about 5 o'clock tonight.
About 5 o'clock, they'll play once again. And so, very interesting matchup. The Yankees at the top of the AL East. We are going to talk about them on the show today, as well as the Nationals and the National League in general. 5 o'clock hour, we get the Cardinals and the Phillies. The Pirates will play host to the Brewers. We get the White Sox at the Indians. In the 6 o'clock hour, Tampa Bay at Houston. The Royals will welcome in the Rangers. We get the Mets and the Rockies. The Rockies just continuing to plummet. Yesterday, blowing a 12-9 lead going into the bottom of the ninth inning. Could not finish off the Texas Rangers. I typically want to blame the starting pitching for the Rockies. Wasn't starting pitching yesterday. It was errors and horrible bullpen work. They blow another game. Tonight, Tyler Anderson will take the mound. He'll go up against Jacob DeGrom. 8 o'clock hour, we get the Angels playing host to the Diamondbacks. The Marlins will go toe-to-toe with the Giants. Andrew Soares, who I've been told is the real deal, will take the mound for the Giants. Caleb Smith will take the rubber for the Marlins. And then also in the nightcap tonight, we get the Dodgers and the Cubs. This is actually at 6:05. Kenta Maeda will go up against Tyler Chatwood. I like this matchup a lot. Are the Dodgers for real or the Cubs for real? Two premier teams in the National League. 3.5 games separate these two. I like this matchup a lot. So some great baseball, to say the least.
Two teams that are going to battle. Dodgers, like we said, they're playing much better. I think they're, what, 11-3 this month, 12-3 this month.
They got 10 guys in the DL, and they're 11-3.
Yeah, these teams in the NL West had a golden opportunity to take full advantage of the Dodgers' struggles early on and prime themselves for a division championship and didn't take care of business. So you let the Dodgers hang around, and now you're going to live with the result.
Well, I think, though, this goes beyond the NL West.
Yeah, it goes for the rest of the NL.
It also goes for the NL Central. I think the Cubs were in a similar situation. They were not playing their best baseball at the beginning of the season.
And they own the Brewers.
They do. And the Brewers right now have a half-game lead on Chicago. But get a load of this. The Brewers are going to play 30 games in 31 days. They started this on Friday. They hold a half-game lead over the Cubs. I'm going to go out on a limb and say 10 games into this brutal stretch, they no longer hold the lead in the division.
No, they won't. They'll falter because they don't have the pitching. And really, their offense has struggled as of late to hang on for that long for 30-31.
Now, we have plenty of baseball to get into on the show today. We are going to be joined next segment by Bill Lasky. He joins us every Monday to kind of do a roundtable discussion of Major League Baseball. We jump all over the place. We'll talk about some trade targets for some squads. Should Seattle all of a sudden become a buyer? I believe they should. I think Seattle's the real deal. I think of the AL. I think we have our five teams right now, barring anything major happening. And I'm talking about a suspension, an injury, or a massive trade. I feel comfortable in telling you what five teams are going to make the playoffs in the American League. So we'll talk about that. We'll give you the local sports rundown. And throughout the week, we're going to be joined by multiple coaches, including Coach Jeff Cincinnatus and Coach Willie Ellington. We're trying to get the schedules matched up for these two to come in and talk about their Legion squads. If you need the standings for the American Legion State, go check them out at CastleCountryRadio.com. They are up right now. We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And the 3A All-State High School softball teams have been announced, and the Carbon Lady Dinos have six representatives throughout the first, second, and honorable mention squads. First off, the 3A first team. Two selections for Carbon High as second baseman Kelsey Sorensen earned the nod after accumulating a .721 on base percentage during her senior campaign. Third baseman Callie Fawcett also received a first team selection. Callie played third base throughout the year. She knocked 12 home runs during her senior campaign to lead the squad. Second team selections included Caitlin Cripps, who was a pitcher slash catcher throughout the year for Carbon High School, and also McKenna Pendergrass, who played shortstop. Two honorable mentions for the Lady Dinos, Dakota Crosher, who played first base and pitcher throughout her junior campaign, and also freshman Lindsay Madrigal. The six selections for Carbon High School comes as no surprise, as the Lady Dino softball squad had the most success the team has ever had at the 3A state championship tournament this past May. The 3A All-State baseball teams have been announced, and both Carbon and Emory have representatives. First off, we'll begin with the Spartans. Easton Gordon, a senior who pitched and played shortstop throughout the year, earned a first-team selection after batting .437 throughout the year while accumulating a 1.3 ERA and striking out 44 batters over the course of his senior campaign. Gordon was a staple for the Emory Spartan baseball team as they advanced to the state championship tournament, finishing 1-2. Now for Carbon High School, they had three representatives, two on the first team. Senior Cody Lowe, who was in the running for MVP, was a no-brainer first-team selection. The senior batted .510. He accumulated 18 doubles, 6 triples, 40 RBIs, and finished 7-1 on the mound. Lowe pitched and played outfield for Carbon throughout the year. He's joined on the first team by teammate Ty Anderson, who batted .380 and accumulated 17 walks and also had 22 RBIs on the year. He also scored 42 runs from the shortstop position. Anderson was known as one of the best defensive shortstops in the 3A classification. And Carbon High School senior Cesar Leia received an honorable mention for his play at second base. In his only year with the team, the foreign exchange student was a staple for the Carbon defense and also was a threat on the base paths throughout the year. Congratulations to those from the Castle Country who received an All-State mention. Registration for the 6th annual Price City International Days Golf Tournament is currently open, as the tournament itself will be returning to the Castle Country on Saturday, July 28th, beginning at 8 a.m. The tournament will once again follow the 4-person scramble format and have a limit of one person with an 8 handicap or better per team. The cost for this year's tournament will be $300 per squad, and that includes green fees, cart, and a lunch. Throughout the tournament, participants will also have an opportunity to play in several side contests, including a big-screen TV putting contest, a $100,000 hole-in-one contest, and free items from each tee box, as sponsors will be present. Registration will begin at 7 a.m. the morning of the tournament. Staging will then start at 7:30. The shotgun cannon start will get things moving at 8. Individuals are also welcome and will be paired with teams. All of the proceeds from this tournament will be given to local charities. To register for the tournament, contact TK's Pro Shop at 637-2388 or Nick Tatton with Price City at 636-3184. Registration is limited to the first 36 teams. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Hey, this is Nick Tropiano with the Anaheim Angels, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
Here comes a comeback. The kid is back, back on track. We're back on Drive Time Sports. It's KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM Monday afternoon. And of course, we always talk Major League Baseball on Mondays with Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher who spent his time with the San Francisco Giants and now works as an analyst all over the Bay Area. I know he worked the Giants and the Dodgers series this past weekend. As we get a little bit closer to the All-Star break, there's a lot of storylines picking up. And Bill, there's plenty to talk to. First off, thank you for taking out the time to join us once again.
Oh, no problem. I enjoy talking baseball with you and your listeners. I know they love listening to Major League Baseball, and we're getting closer to the All-Star break, so now we're going to see who's going to be the buyers and sellers, and you're hearing so many rumors coming out of different teams, and of course, the two teams that keep talking about, the Yankees and Boston, wanting to add on, and these two teams are so stellar of teams, but they still think they have holes to fill.
I agree with that. And again, the Red Sox right now at 49-24, the Yankees at 46-21. Win percentage wise, they're neck and neck with each other. But I'll tell you why I believe they have holes to fill, Bill, and that's because in the AL West, we have the Houston Astros that have won 11 in a row now, and they're playing like World Series champions.
I got to go out there. Last week I told you I was going to go see Verlander pitch, and I thought he pitched really well. Of course, when you know, Cole goes out there the day before and he gets 10 runs in the first two innings, sometimes it's harder to pitch with that kind of lead. You kind of get relaxed. But both of them against the A's pitched really well, and they got two wins on them. And, of course, Seattle is still keeping up with them. But, man, you went 11 in a row in the big leagues, and that's a feat that's really difficult to do. And they still have a winning streak going. They haven't lost yet.
Yeah, I always look at the last 10 because, I mean, it really can kind of paint the picture for what's ahead for a team. And when you look at a team that's won 11 consecutively, they're doing something right. And you mentioned it, the pitching staff. We're going to talk about Verlander. I know Keuchel got off to a little rough start, but even he had a bounce back game. I mean, they're only giving up 4 run spat during this 11-game winning streak. They've been fairly dominant on the mound.
And I tell you what, when you see dominance like that, the first thing as a pitcher as I was, is the defense. And they have such good quality defenders, and they can put guys in, put guys out. They're not losing much. Their infield is so dynamic on getting ranges left and right. And, you know, just watching them, you know, just take little infield in between innings and their throws, so perfect. And that's what I love watching big league baseball. When you go to the games, you see this stuff in between innings where you don't see it if you're watching it on television or listening to it on radio. And those are some of the things as an ex-player I love to go out and watch. And the little dynamics between the innings and watching guys, how they compete, how they're into the game, and then, of course, you know, preparing for the on-deck hitter. I love watching that type thing where they're always trying to catch an edge by going a little further out, see what the split is or the curveball is and what kind of spin it is, and just fun things when you go to a game to watch those little things happen.
I know it would be very premature to talk about which teams are expected to get into the postseason 1 through 5 right now in the American League, but Bill, when I look at it, I would be really surprised if by the time we get to the playoffs, if it's not the Yankees, Red Sox, Indians, Astros, and Mariners. And that's just, it's a short sample size and over 70 games into the season. But in the AL, boy, it sure looks like those are the 5 best teams. And really, there's a distant number 6 after those 5.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, sometimes, you know, when you look at Major League Baseball, you want a little more competitiveness between, you know, the divisions. But, boy, they're separating already even before the All-Star break. And you got the Tigers who have been playing pretty well under Cleveland. And, you know, there's no way Detroit's even going to be able to keep the pace that they are on. But the other teams, I mean, it is justified that it's separating. And I think you're going to start hearing more rumors of some of these teams picking up players. And the team that you and I talked about last week is the Mariners. Here, Robinson Cano, their leader, goes out, of course, with the wrist injury and then the PED problem. They're playing better baseball without him than when they did. And they're playing consistent baseball. And, of course, picking up Bernard Spann, boy, he just came over hot as hell from Tampa Bay, and he's lighting it up in Seattle now.
You know, there's a bunch of names that we could talk about that a team like Seattle may look to acquire, but one that I thought was really interesting, and this poked up over the weekend, would be the Blue Jays left-hander J.A. Happ. I mean, if Seattle was able to land a left-hander with what they already have, how much more potent would they be, especially a left-hander with the ability of Happ?
Well, I think the biggest thing on both the Red Sox and the Yankees, they're definitely dialed in on him too, because the Red Sox and the Yankees hit right-handers so well. They have a dominance of left-handers. Of course, the Yankees can do it either way, but the home run power the Yankees are displaying is unbelievable. But in the beginning of the year, spring training, I could see home runs. But now it's starting to heat up. The weather's starting to get warmer, and these balls are taking off. But I think both the Yankees and Red Sox are dialed in on Hap, too, as he's that possible left-hander that Toronto could give away for some prospects. And then Seattle, like you said, if they could start picking up pieces here and there, they're going to contend. They got a good hitting team, and they're playing good baseball right now.
Again, we're being joined right now by Bill Lasky as we recap the last week and the current storylines in Major League Baseball. Bill, the NL West, of course, you cover the Dodgers and the Giants series from this past weekend. The Dodgers take 2 out of 3, and I think that's been the storyline. I pay attention to power rankings, and the Dodgers seem to be climbing everyone's power rankings, even though they're 37-33, and I think they've won, I believe, 8 out of their last 11 games. It's still very tight in the NL West.
Very much so, and I think everybody's just knocking each other off. Arizona had that great month of April, scuffled in May. They're starting to play better baseball. But you're right, the Dodgers, I do believe, 11-3 for the month of June. They have over 90 home runs, leading the National League, which is, you know, not that much compared to when you look at the Yankees, Red Sox, Cleveland. I mean, they're all 90s and over 100. So the Dodgers are hitting long balls. Kemp and Kiki Hernandez, Friday night and Saturday, both games were won by them. Kemp is having an exceptional year as a guy that was struggling with Atlanta. They picked him back up, and he's pretty much carried him. You know, Stripling is a guy that really doesn't come off our vocabulary as one of the top pitchers in the National League. But take a look at his numbers. His numbers are phenomenal ever since he got put back in the rotation, and he definitely opened my eyes Friday when he pitched. And then you got some other guys in that rotation that are struggling here and there, but there, you know, with Kershaw on the bench, you just don't know when he's going to come back with the back problems. But they are definitely on a mounting attack to try to take that NL West lead. And, you know, we're talking 6 weeks ago, they were in last place with absolutely no direction. And sure enough, Dave Roberts gathered them all, and now they're playing good baseball. And Colorado, your team out there, has been struggling. Their bullpen just kind of fell apart in Texas. And just don't know what's going to happen with this NL West. You're talking probably 6 games from first to second or first to last. And at the same time, everyone has gone in these spells of winning and losing streaks. And, you know, the Giants were on the road so much. The team of Major League Baseball has been on the road the most, and now they're coming home. They have the next 22 out of 26 at home, so the home cooking could help them. And to lead off with Miami for 3, San Diego for 4, and Colorado, you know, this is a homestand that they have to dominate. They have to get back in here and play some good home baseball. And as we talk, you know, they went into Miami and lost 3 out of 4 after capitalizing and beat Washington 2 out of 3. And I think that was a wake-up call to say, hey, you know, we need to start playing better baseball on the road. But right now, going to the All-Star break, they're home more than away. And they play so well in AT&T this year. They're second in the National League with home records. So we'll see what happens, but I still think the NL West is up for grabs.
I agree with you. I mean, the Dodgers have 10 guys on the DL right now. I'm starting to lose faith in the Rockies. I mean, you talked about it. That game yesterday to Texas, inexcusable to blow a 12-9 lead going into the ninth inning. I mean, that just can't happen. I think we agree the Padres are a year away, but the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, and the Giants, I think it's going to be an interesting race down the stretch.
It's going to be exciting, and that's what I think, you know, all divisions should be like that. Of course, you can't because there's some teams that are just tanking already. You know, when you look at Baltimore, I just cannot believe how Baltimore is playing. I thought they would be a lot better. Cincinnati's on a rebuild. There's no doubt there. And then you just start, you know, Kansas City also. So there are a few teams that, you know, pretty much check the box. They're gone. But can you pick somebody out of those teams that could help you? That's the thing that these top teams need to look at. Those are the teams that could, you know, Avado help you. Would you be able to put that kind of money on your payroll now? You know, Scooter Jeanette's another name that's a good possibility. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And I'm sure all your executives are looking at all the teams that could you pick somebody up cheap? Could you pick somebody up in a minor league trade? And if you can, and to add to your roster, boy, it would be an advantage.
Bill, if we take a look at the Central, the Brewers right now are up by a half game on the Cubs. But Friday, Milwaukee begins a stint that is, I mean, it's I can't wrap my head around it. They will play 30 games in 31 days. I mean, that's a brutal schedule, right? That doesn't even seem like it's possible. They're going to play that much baseball in that short period of time. And in an NL Central race that is so closely contested, you got to worry about fatigue with a team like this.
Oh, very interesting, because you only play 17 games, then you get a day off. So think of the magnitude that's going to be. You know, playing 17 day off and you're playing 13 stretch. So it is difficult. The Giants are doing the same thing. They're finishing up a 17-game stretch, too. They just went 10 on the road. Now they're going to play 7 before they get Monday off, the following Monday. So it's tough stretches, but at the same time, I hate to say it, but that's what you sign up to play professional baseball about. You got to suck it up sometimes and push yourself, and hopefully the fatigue where the managers and hot humidity can give them a day off here and there, and that's the strategy of every manager and your bench coaches to give you those ideas and try to add this guy in there to give him some at-bats to work your bench, because as you know, and we all always talk about, it's a 25-man roster, and really you can go up to 35 when you start bringing guys up and back, and you've got that 10-day DL. Those are the players that are going to make you a championship team.
Before I let you go, Bill, I want to talk about another team in the National League. We'll talk about the New York Mets. I think they're about to be big, big sellers here relatively soon. So I want you to go ahead and put on the cap of general manager here for the New York Mets. Syndergaard or DeGrom, which one of these two would you move? Would you look to move first, or would you look to move both? Or can we expect both of these guys to be moved?
I don't think you're going to see both of them. I think maybe one, but you're going to have to get three or four top prospects for those guys because they're such strong pitchers. And, you know, I'm a little, pull back on that whole Mets picking up a new manager. And then, you know, it just was going so well, and then it just kind of tanked. And they got rid of Adrian Gonzalez at first base. They're trying to use some other veteran players. I think the direction of Sandy Alderson, I think he could be one of the GMs that could be dismissed. I mean, he's a strong candidate, but the Mets just have no direction of which way they want to go, and it struggles. And you and I both talked, New York, under the lights, I mean, they probably have him on a lynch pad over there right now, and it's just not working. And we just have to see what's going to happen. Are they going to sell out their top prospects? Are they going to try to rebuild like everybody wants to? I just don't think they're going to throw in the towel quite yet.
Bill Lasky, Bill, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work, because you are everywhere right now.
I'm everywhere in Northern California. How's that? Radio, TV. But I really have been enjoying the Sacramento River Cats. That's been a fun addition where I go to Sacramento and do TV with them color-wise. And, we talked last time about Thames, and he's back in the big leagues, and he hit a ball the other day pretty well. So I thought the rehab assignment for him was going to be quick, and he's back in the big leagues. So it's fun to go down there and seeing prospects play. It's fun to see some of the veterans on different teams trying to get back to the big leagues and minor league baseball. You have it in Salt Lake City. Get out and support them. It's fun baseball, and it's appealing. It's a good time. So I enjoy doing what I'm doing, and, of course, I enjoy talking to you every Monday, and I appreciate you including me in this, and I appreciate your time with your listeners.
Thank you so much, Bill. I know we'll do it again soon.
Thank you so much. Have a good week.
Bill Lasky joining us to talk some Major League Baseball. We've got a break for just a moment. I do have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return. It's right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan. This is must. Say it again. Buscarini? All right. Jordan Buscarini. All right. With Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queensbridge right now.
Coming to you live from Price.
Put that cookie down.
Price, Utah.
Now.
Me and my man, Trav. Love Price. Price is awesome.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini and Travis Anderson on KOAL AM 750. Eastern Utah's main source for local sporting news.
We don't talk enough golf here on Drive Time Sports. That's what I want to talk about in this segment. U.S. Open over the weekend, very challenging course. Brooks Koepka picks up his second consecutive U.S. Open championship, which is impressive. I don't care what you're talking about. I mean, that right there is an accomplishment in itself, and I don't believe that he is getting the credit or the recognition for winning his second consecutive U.S. Open because he did it with a plus one. And Travis, I'm okay with that. I know that a lot of people were angry over the scores. You and I were talking off of the cuff. A lot of people were angry about the fact that some of the bigger names did not make the cut. And maybe that was an issue this weekend of the U.S. Open. But nonetheless, it's sad that it's overshadowing this, and the Phil Mickelson situation is overshadowing what Brooks Koepka was able to accomplish.
Well, Shinnecock's a tough golf course, and there's a lot of weird bunkers in the placement. So the scores were going to be high going into this, and you were going to have a lot of good golfers miss the cut because of this golf course. It's a tough, tough golf course.
Now, if you didn't watch it, he started his title defense with a 75. He was 7 over par midway through the second round, kept his mind straight, found a way to bounce back, pulled away from a 4-way tie for the lead with 3 birdies and 5 holes, held off Tommy Fleetwood and his record tying 63, and closed with a 2-under 68 for a one-shot victory to become the first repeat champion in 29 years. That's what I'm saying. It's pretty remarkable when you take a look at it. So while Brooks Koepka definitely should be the story, unfortunately, he's not. Instead today, and look, I'm not going to say I'm a massive golf fan by any means. There are certain tournaments that you have to watch, and I think the U.S. Open is definitely one of those, right? We can agree on that.
That's my favorite one. The U.S. Open is my favorite.
So Phil Mickelson goes 16 over and is actually getting more pub today than Koepka picking up his second consecutive U.S. Open championship. Mickelson in round 4 was minus 1. And again, plus 16. But what he did on Saturday on hole number 13 seemed to be like a dagger in the hearts of golf fans all over the world. I mean, they were so livid with Phil Mickelson. It's as if he's disgraced the game. And if you missed this, I encourage you to YouTube it. You can take a look at it. He's got a little bit of a lengthy putt. He misses. He missed badly. Frustration is starting to sink in. Mickelson chases down the ball, and he hits it while it's still moving, misses the hole again, it comes to a stop, he putts it in, he gets a 2-stroke penalty. And he was really, he was interrogated about this decision after the fact when his round came to a close. Here's the interview now if you missed it live.
It's a simple question. What happened over at 13?
Look, I don't mean disrespect by anybody. I know it's a 2-shot penalty, and at that time I just didn't feel like going back and forth and hitting the same shot over. I took the 2-shot penalty, moved on. It's my understanding of the rules. I've had multiple times where I've wanted to do that. I just finally did.
Did you think the ball was going to roll off the green when you hit it?
No question. It was going to go down into the same spot behind the bunker. I wasn't going to have a shot. And I don't know if I would have been able to save a shot or whatnot, but I know it's a 2-shot penalty, hitting a moving ball. I tried to hit as close to the hole as I could to make the next one. And, you take the 2 shots, you move on.
Does it show disrespect to the championship?
It's certainly not meant that way. It's meant to, take advantage of the rules as best as you can. And in that situation, it was just going. I was just going back and forth, and I'd gladly take the 2 shots over continuing that display.
You're really admired around this golfing world, especially here at the U.S. Open. What do you say to those people that love you so much, follow you? Do you regret what you've done?
I've had an awesome day. The people here have been incredible. It's been, singing happy birthdays, wishing happy birthdays. The people here have made coming here over the decades an awesome experience. And I had it's a fun birthday. I don't mean it in any disrespect. And if that's the way people took it, I apologize to them. But that's not the way it was taken. I took the 2-shot penalty, moved on. And
now that was Curtis Strange interviewing Mickelson following the completion of the round. Look, first off, that interview, he's being talked to as if he shot somebody, for crying out loud. Strange went after him. Strange was disgusted in what he did on the green. And again, I'm not a huge golf enthusiast. But I will say this. He took advantage of a poorly written rule. That's my take on it. I think frustration set in, and I think it was an opportunity. He said in the interview he's wanted to do that before. And I think in a tournament where the scores are just completely in the dumps and you're tied for 48th, I think Mickelson was frustrated but also knew that that ball was going to roll off of the green. Would it have? I don't know. I've watched the clip a couple of times. I don't know if it would have. But if it did, he took advantage of a poorly written rule.
He did.
Okay, and it was a two-stroke penalty. Let me ask you this, and golf fans may say that I am completely off base here, and that's fine. Mickelson preventing his ball from rolling off of the green, hitting it while it's still moving, is it any different than an NBA basketball team intentionally fouling DeAndre Jordan to put him at the line when the game is close?
Taking advantage of a rule.
Tell me, is it smart? Am I wrong here?
No, you're not. Curtis Strange takes offense because he's a former golfer.
Well, he was ticked. He was not happy.
He's a former U.S. Open winner. He's in the Golf Hall of Fame, and he was ticked because he thinks it's disrespectful to the game. It may be so, but in the end, it's a game, and he was having fun. See, it shows a human side to things for Phil Mickelson.
Golf is a gentleman's sport.
Mm-hmm, but
and I think
they're
if you
still so uptight.
I agree with you. But you and I are not hardcore golf fans. So look,
no.
I understand why Mickelson did it. I don't see the outrage in what he did. But then again, like I said, you and I are not hardcore golfers. Okay, you and I take offense to certain antics on the baseball diamond or on the basketball court. And I'm sure golfers, golf fans or golf enthusiasts would look at that and say, what's the big deal? Really, I kind of see why he did it.
It's smart.
I think it is. Like I said, he took advantage of a poorly written rule. This should not negate everything that this guy has accomplished. He's one of the most well-respected golfers in the world, not only here in the country, but in the world. And I really thought that Strange's interview was a little bit over the top, right? I really thought that, you know, he asked the same question in different contexts like 3 or 4 times. I thought Phil answered it, wasn't going to change his opinion. I thought he answered the question. He answered him with grace. I mean, look, if LeBron James has asked something at the podium that he doesn't like, he just storms off. So
well,
I give Phil
credit. Go back to what LeBron said, a few years ago in Miami when they lost, and he was making fun of people who were poor.
Well, right, and I don't want to bring LeBron James into this. I'm just saying that Mickelson sat there and he took it. He owned it. He owned the fact that he made a mistake, but he said that he did it on purpose. I mean, he admitted to doing it on purpose. So is this a rule that should be changed? Should it be an automatic disqualification if you hit a ball if it's still moving? Because people are acting like Phil Mickelson is now the new Happy Gilmore. And I don't understand the outrage, but like I said, I'm not a golf enthusiast. It's a gentleman's sport. I get it. Did he disrespect the game? No, I don't think he did.
No.
I don't.
I think he was having fun. In the moment, he got frustrated.
I don't think he was having fun.
And then...
You think he was having fun?
I think at that moment he did. At first, he was frustration, ran over. He said he's planned this for years. He wanted to do it.
He was laughing as he was walking off of the green, but I think it was a laugh out of frustration. I don't think he did it for fun. I think he knew what exactly the outcome would be if he did it.
I think it's
funny.
I'd be
lying if I said I haven't watched this and laughed at it over and over again.
I found it funny. I found nothing but funny. I thought it was hilarious.
Let me play you a movie clip of what it reminded me of.
It's about time.
Hey, it is about time. I mean, I just couldn't get the ball in the hole. I wanted to, but I just couldn't do it.
That's Happy Gilmore. He just wanted to get the ball in the hole, but he just couldn't do it.
It's funny. Lighten up, golf people.
We've got a break for just a moment. More Drive Time Sports coming up when we return.
This is Derek Favors, number 15 from the Utah Jazz. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini.
3-point game, Harris. Pick and roll it. Favors takes it strong and one. Oh my. Watch Derek Favors take a leap right here.
Back to put the final touches on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports. Right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. Scoreboard update for you. The Washington Nationals topped the Yankees 5-3. That was a shortened game, makeup game. Now the two teams will take the field again in just a few moments, actually right now, after this game. We got all kinds of baseball throughout the 5 o'clock hour. I do want to make one thing perfectly clear. I was in no way, shape, or form making fun of the game of golf. Okay, I want to make that perfectly clear in that last segment. I'm not making fun of the game of golf. I'm simply saying that Phil Mickelson took advantage of a poorly written rule. You, on the other hand, said that golfers and golf fans need to lighten up a little bit.
Have some fun.
Yeah, but that's not what the game's about.
Nah, it's a game. In the end of all, it's a game.
I guess. I don't. That's something that, again, hardcore golf fans will just have a different opinion than the casual golf fans. I think one thing that we can't agree on, I'm looking forward to the NBA draft. It is coming up this weekend. We talked about Michael Porter Jr. last week on the show, and you would say that he's going to end up going number two to Sacramento, which I think would be a fine pick for the Kings. He was talking with the media today. Now, remember, he had issues with his hip and back. He had a back injury.
He's broken.
That turned out to be a hip injury.
Yeah.
That's never a good sign.
No.
But he says he's feeling great, and he wouldn't dismiss the idea of working out for teams this week ahead of the NBA draft. He said, quote, it's a possibility. I feel good. I got evaluated. I let the doctors come in and do all their tests on me. I'm feeling good. I think teams are comfortable, but I might get a couple of workouts in. If this guy doesn't work out for you, would you take him number two?
It's hard. It's hard to take a guy when you don't see him work out. You got to see him work out. So if the Kings feel comfortable, if he works out and they like what they see, they shouldn't have him because I think he's going to be a very good player in this league.
Raw talent. Mm-hmm. Raw talent. But again, he missed most of his only season at Missouri because of a back injury in November, and it required him to have surgery on his L3 and L4 spinal discs. He was cleared to play in March, participated in two games for Mizzou, shot 9 of 29 from the field. But he said that the reports about his injury last week, particularly his hip, were exaggerated. I don't expect him to say anything else, especially around draft day.
Got to protect yourself, man,
right,
at this point.
He said his back is normal. He has no issues with it. There's no risk of re-injury. Every MRI he's ever done is perfect from this point on. And he's currently ranked number 6 among the top 100 prospects for the draft. That's according to ESPN. I could really see Michael Porter falling anywhere from number 2 all the way down to number 10. I really think it's that big of a gap. Like, it's that big of a question. Do you want to take a risk on him?
And does somebody trade up and grab a guy that they like, and then, you know, the domino effect? Maybe Orlando takes him, like you said. Maybe Cleveland, the Knicks, the Kings. So there's some teams out there that we got to wait on.
I know that every time you talk about injury risks in the NBA draft, people are going to bring up Greg Oden because that is the most recent injury, I guess, I don't want to say injury prone, but player that had question marks coming in, we knew his raw talent. I mean, look, I think you and I disagree on this because you say that Kevin Durant should have hands down been the number one pick. If I go back to that draft, I understand why Portland took Greg Oden. I really do.
I don't. I would have took Kevin Durant.
It's hard to go against Greg Oden, man. Really. I know hindsight is 20/20. There were red flags, and we had a trainer for the Portland Trailblazers on the show, and I asked him if it was a red flag to them that Greg Oden had one leg that was an inch longer than the other, and he said no, it wasn't, and they believed that he was going to be an all-star in the league for quite some time, and I believe that he possessed that ability, don't get me wrong. Here's where it differs. For one, Sacramento does not have the number one pick.
No.
All right. Portland did have the number one pick.
Yeah.
So it was a risk. You were passing up on Kevin Durant to take a risk on Greg Oden. To me, the best player in this draft is DeAndre Ayton. Sacramento's not going to have him on the board when they're picking at number two. He's not going to be there. The best player is going to be off the board. Now, you do have a Marvin Bagley, who I think is going to be a great player.
And that's who I think Sacramento has to take that guy, because I think Marvin Bagley...
Because it's safer.
It's safer, yeah. Because you don't... Those injuries can linger on in a career, and he could have a career... Yeah, I could compare it to maybe Brandon Roy.
I would be willing to take a risk on Michael Porter Jr. over the likes of Trae Young.
Yeah, I wouldn't touch Trae Young.
People will call you and I crazy for saying that, but I'd be willing to.
He don't play defense. I don't like his size. I don't think his game translates to the NBA game very well.
Here's what I worry about with Michael Porter. I worry about teams passing on him in the top 6, top 7. You have Cleveland sitting there at number 8. Cleveland's going to get him, and they're going to have a gem. Or he falls even further in Philadelphia, who can take a flyer on a player right now, takes Michael Porter and he turns out to be a stud.
And they just add to their pieces, yep.
I mean, that's what I would worry about. Would I take this guy number two? I probably wouldn't take him number two.
I would take Marvin Bagley.
But if the Kings do, I'm saying I understand why.
Yeah.
I mean, the talent is there for this kid. He's that
Kings
good.
The Kings need to ignite that franchise somehow. I mean, De'Aaron Fox, all right. He's all right. But other than that, what do you have in Sacramento? What are you going to watch the Kings for? What player?
Yeah, but I guess if Michael Porter doesn't play...
So that's why you go with the safer pick.
You go with the safer pick, okay.
You can
all right.
build around Marvin Bagley. It's a safer pick to go with De'Aaron Fox, and you got those two, you know, young superstars.
Michael Porter, I think he's a top three talent in the draft.
He's very good.
I think Luka Doncic is a very good player as well. So I think there's four players that you can't miss on. But if Sacramento was to go that route, I could understand why.
Yeah,
I could just see Porter falling down the draft boards, and he winds up with a team that's already established, and he turns out to be a stud. That's what I can see happening.
He would be perfect for Orlando, a team that doesn't have much.
That's going to do it for us on this edition of the show. A lot of fun today. Talk some golf, talk some Major League Baseball. Tomorrow, we'll jump back in on the local sports front. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. You have a terrific Monday. We'll catch you tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.